Hi, this is Clint Vibrock for Telluride Inside and Out, speaking with personal friend Laurie DeBevoort. Our topic is the Arab Spring. Laurie will be leading a discussion on the Arab Spring at the Wilkinson Public Library on Tuesday, January 17th at 6 p.m. Hello, Laurie.
Hello, Clint. Hi.
Hi. So, just to get this ball rolling, the first response last summer from the West about the end of the dictatorships in several Arab world countries was optimism. The second response was a fear of the effect of fundamentalist Muslim sects gaining political power. Give us your take on this subject.
There were several concerns that various observers raised in the West. One is the possible rise through the processes of democracy that would result from these uprisings of Muslim groups. And there is in this country generally a overwrought fear of Islam. Mm-hmm. In its most extreme forms, this fear has people worried that Muslim law, Sharia, is going to be imposed on the United States.
Right.
Or that U.S. policies in the Middle East are going to be thwarted by Muslim leaders or fundamentalists, sometimes called Islamists. But in my view, these fears are unreasoned and unnecessary and not useful to the formation of good policy on the part of the United States. And the reason for that is this. Sharia law, by definition, and by its very nature, can only be invoked in a country that is Muslim. The United States is not unlikely to become Muslim. And so there is nobody seeking to impose Sharia law in any of its aspects on the United States or indeed on any non-Muslim country. Were the United States, of course, to become Islamic, then the population, having become Islamic through some unimaginable scenario, would want Sharia law to be applied. In terms of policies and so forth, the dictators in the Middle East have many of them, in order to stay in power, formed alliances with countries like the United States. So we supply them military equipment, and we help keep them in power because they're willing to pursue policies that we wish, even if those policies vary from what their own populations want. So it is a reasonable concern that with the overthrow of these dictators, these many former allies of the United States, I should say allies of convenience because it certainly isn't an alliance built upon common values.
Right.
Anyway, the advent of democracy does give the people the right to help formulate the foreign policies of their own countries, as well as the domestic policies. So there will be challenges from these Arab Springs to the casual sense that the United States has that we have a right to pursue our policies working through people who are pliant to our demands, our needs.
Right.
So the Muslims, though, within that context, don't represent to us any particular threat. A secular Arab, for example, Muslim or not, is just as likely to be concerned, for example, about the main policy sticking point for the United States in the Middle East, that is, our relationship with Israel. A secular Arab is just as likely to oppose our policies with regard to Israel as a Muslim practitioner, believer would be. Some are also concerned that Islam as such is incompatible with democracy. And that's not true at all, neither in practice nor in principle. The political structure of Islam is, at its most profound, quite compatible with democracy. That is, the notion that the people will determine who they're going to be governed by, what the shape of their government is, what the policies are going to be, and so forth. This is the essence of democracy, and it's also an essential aspect of political Islam. On a practical level, we've seen in every country that's had an Arab Spring, from Tunisia to Egypt to sort of the quiet Arab Springs we don't quite hear much about in Jordan and Morocco. We don't hear about them because they haven't involved the overthrow of the kings or the rulers, but
right.
they have involved the overthrow of cabinets and so forth. The Muslim groups, like the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, is in fact pursuing a completely democratic course of action. It is running in the elections for parliament, for example. It is not going to run somebody for the presidency of Egypt, or at least that's their position at this point. But they're working through established electoral mechanisms and using the same techniques of advertising, you know, to get their message out. They're participating in panel discussions and debates to make their points of view known and so forth. So I don't see any reason to be concerned about the Muslim role or its emergence in these Arab Springs or the present situation. I don't see any threat in any of those countries of a form of Islam emerging that we would have any real problems with.
Well, the other thing that occurs to me is that we in the U.S. tend to be far removed from a lot of the things that are actually happening. And one of the ways that this comes out in my mind is that I think for the general population in the U.S., we consider the Muslim world to be sort of monolithic. Now, I know that you're currently involved in a Muslim versus Muslim situation in the Washington area. I'm just curious how this experience, or whether that has given you any new insights or strengthened insights into sectarian or Muslim versus Muslim conflict in the Arab world.
Yes, you know, this is something among several different questions that we're going to be probing on the 17th at the library. And it's a very, very interesting question. The conflict that you're referring to that I'm heavily engaged in and knowledgeable about is taking place within one of the largest mosques in the Washington area. And what has been stunning to me was that the conflict there, which is over the refusal of the people in the governing council to depart once their terms are up, is very similar to the terms of the conflict in the Middle East and North Africa. Same kind of language, same kind of dissent over the same kinds of issues. Now, of course, fortunately, at the mosque, nobody's been killed, nobody's been tortured. But short of that, the shape of the conflict is almost identical. I was in North Africa this summer looking into a number of issues, including the political situations involved with the Arab Springs there in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Egypt. And I could see these same patterns of conflict. And it's a long and big subject, probably too long for our quick interview here. But I'm hoping that people who are interested in this will come and join the discussion on the 17th.
That's great.
You know, we'll be able to discuss what I've learned firsthand with regard to that mosque situation and apply the patterns that I've been seeing firsthand there to our understanding of the Arab Springs and what the future holds for them. Because, of course, the Arab Springs haven't been completed. We don't know, you know, what's really, in the end, going to be the situation that emerges in Egypt and these other countries. It's a fascinating time, and it's appropriate that it grabs so many of the headlines this year.
Well, that's great. So, once again, Laura DeBevoort will be talking at the Wilkinson Public Library on Tuesday, January 17th at 6 p.m., and I expect there'll be plenty of time for answering questions that we all have about a firsthand view, in many cases, of how these things are taking place. Thanks, Laura.
Many thanks to you, Clint. Hope to see you and everybody else there on the 17th.
I'll be there.